Hey, everybody. My name is April Lovett.
And my name is Daryl Lovett.
We've been together for 5 years, and we have a 3-year-old sweet and sassy little girl, an adorable and smiley baby boy, and our fur child, our dog, Lainey.
That's right. We also work our 9-to-5 jobs together, we teach together, and we co-own The Lovett Company.
That's right. We do so much together, and we wanted to share some of our tips and tricks for living out our 24/7 relationship.
Oh, yes. A relationship that is all day, every day.
Plus, we want to share with you how we manage to run our side business alongside full-time jobs and still find time for kids, chores, and fun. So in this podcast, The Success in Black and White Podcast, we'll be talking about working towards success, overcoming failures, and just living our everyday lives.
So get ready. We're going to be bringing to you real talk concepts every week as we share some of our stories, best practices, as well as talk to guests about how they have found success by doing extraordinary things in their everyday lives.
We are excited to be coming back to you again. So you want to start with life updates like we usually do?
Yeah, life update.
Yeah.
I just got back off of another cruise.
Seriously, he got back from another cruise.
So me and a bunch of the guys, we take a cruise annually. And it's just an opportunity for us to all get together and just fellowship and hang out with each other and just be stress-free. So during this cruise, we get to kind of just avoid doing all the things that we have to do when we take our wives on a cruise with us. So we don't got to stop and take pictures everywhere with everything. We don't got to stop and look at everything. We ain't got to dress up for dinner and all that stuff. It's just the fellas, we hang out and we talk. And if we see each other and that's cool, we link up. If not, we keep it moving. We ain't got to call each other. We ain't got no plans or nothing. So it was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. So that's my life update. I'm refreshed, I'm revived, and I'm renewed.
So for those of you keeping count, Daryl has been on 3 cruises.
No, we're not keeping count.
In the past.
No, we're not
3 keeping months? Count. 4 months.
No, don't count.
I'm keeping count.
Oh. I so took you on one though, right?
You did take so me on one. That's
that
true.
Like balances everything else out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right, sure. So life update for me. In my full-time work life, I'm actually transitioning roles, and I'm really excited about it.
Again.
Yeah, this will be the 4th transition in 6 years, but I'm super excited. What it does mean is that I won't be working in recreation and physical activity anymore, per se. I'm helping out a little bit here and there, but I am going to work with the vice president's office, and I'm super excited about it.
You should be.
Yeah.
Well deserved.
Thanks, babe. I'm very excited, though. I will be doing kind of similar things, research and assessment and data gathering and storytelling using data, which is what my strength is. So, yeah, that is my life update.
Cool.
Besides the fact that we discovered last night that Vaughn now has 6 teeth.
Yeah, 6 teeth at 7 months. My man ready to eat some chicken. He ready to eat some steak. We just got to get him chewing, though.
Yeah, he's not good at the chewing.
No, he has the teeth, and he just inhales like, you know, like the babies do. But we got to get him to chewing.
He's so like a little vacuum.
Yeah. But he does. He has 6 teeth.
Yeah.
At 7 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are our life updates, and we're going to jump into this episode, and I want to, I am so super excited for this episode.
I'm kind of excited. this is like right down her path, because we took a different approach, and she had an opportunity to do some research and some assessment and analyzing data, which she loves to do. And we're going to talk about that later, but this episode, she had an opportunity to kind of incorporate that into our podcast. And it also kind of branches over into the business side of what we do as well. So I'm excited about that part of it, but the stories and the numbers and all of that stuff is all her. And you probably heard this in a previous episode. She loves that stuff, and it gets her excited, and so be it, have at it.
Today we're going to be discussing basically what it's like being an interracial couple. And I almost titled it, I think when we first really, I mean, we always knew we were going to do these types of episodes, not all the way throughout, like it's not the sole focus of our podcast.
Right.
But we knew that we would incorporate that because that's what makes us who we are.
Exactly.
And so originally I was going to say what it's like being an interracial couple in America. But when I started doing the research and what that meant was reaching out to couples who are interracial couples, I got responses back from literally all over the world,
yeah,
which is so exciting. So we're just going to call it what it's like being an interracial couple.
Period.
Period. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So I just want to preemptive, and I think when I sent Daryl these notes, I think this is the stuff that he was like, man, you're going to have to like tell them that this is not a normal podcast episode. We are doing this a little bit differently than we usually do. We are going to share a lot of stories. I do have some data I want to share first, which is like the difference because we don't usually do that, but it is part of what I do both in my full-time roles and in our business.
Right.
And it's super important to me to really understand some of the statistics about what we're talking about.
You know what? Even though I say that I'm not like overly excited about it,
people are going to stop listening right now.
No. Get excited, people. Get excited. But to just see some of the results that she was able to gather and some of the stories and what people were willing to share, it makes you think about things differently when you're in that same world with April and I. But I think this is going to be some great information. And I definitely know that for the listeners out there, you're going to get to see what it's like to not only be in the world of April and I, but to kind of see what it's like for other relationships that are similar to us being interracial. And then also you can look at it from a friendship perspective as well, and how if you're engaging with friends who are either in interracial relationships or friends that are just a different race than you, because a lot of it overlaps. And I think that when I was reading through some of the responses, I was able to pick that out and to understand that it wasn't just our relationship being that April is my wife, but relationships in general. And that's something that we talk about a lot. And I think that this will also cross over into that realm as well.
Yeah, a little bit for sure. The other way that this podcast episode will be a little bit different than the usual is not only the data sharing and some of the storytelling from other people besides us, although we will share our own stories too. But it's going to be there will be parts. So this will be a part one of at least part two and potentially part three series, because we got so many good responses from couples.
Yeah, there were a lot of responses.
I couldn't believe it. I was in tears at some points because their stories are very compelling and relevant. And we just want to make sure that we're sharing out what those stories are.
Yeah, and we say it in our intro. We talk to ordinary people doing extraordinary things or living extraordinary lives.
Right.
And that's something that we realized throughout these responses. And we definitely want to share these stories out, even though we're not interviewing the people in person.
Right. It was more of an online interview. We'll talk a little bit about that methodology.
Research and assessment.
Yeah. I want to share a quote, though, that's so funny because one of my colleagues said it in a meeting a couple days ago, and he said this quote: when you tell a story, it helps combat ignorance, but it may or may not help combat prejudice. And I was like, whoa, I looked at him and in my head, I'm like, you don't know what I'm going to use this for. But that was excellent because it was not even this topic. It was something completely different. But we were talking about data. And that's all that to me stories are sharing people's perspectives in order to help understanding. So we're going to dig in a little bit. And again, it's just a little bit different, but I really wanted to understand interracial relationships and the history. And I will put a disclaimer out is that the only thing I could really find that was respectable research, so from the Pew Research Center, was focused on America. So apologies to our listeners that are across the world. I could only find American and U.S. related data for this. So we're going to talk briefly about that. And I just also want to preempt that when we discuss the terms of race in this episode and any subsequent episodes that are related to interracial relationships, we're going to use the U.S. Census terms of race, which are white, black, or Asian, or how the couple we interviewed described themselves. So yes, we're trying to be respectful to how they identify. Okay, so I wanted to, again, this is all research from the Pew Research Center, but I was super interested in this. So 1967 in the United States was the first year that there was a law. There was basically a law saying that couples that were of not the same race or of different races could not marry until the year 1967 in the U.S. And so in 1967, the percentage of people entering into interracial marriages in the United States was 3%. So once they banned that law, 3% of people in the U.S. stood up and was like, great, now I can get married to the person I love.
Right.
Is basically what that's saying. They did a couple of benchmarking. So then in 1980, it went from 3% to 7% of people in the United States, which was 230,000. So 230,000 individuals, not couples, entered into interracial marriages then. In 2015, that number went up to 17%, which was 670,000 individuals in the United States, which there are millions and millions of individuals in the United States. So it's a very small fraction. It's a very small percentage, even in 2015. Let me see. I thought this was super interesting. Interracial marriages vary, and even to this day, by race and ethnicity. So this is what Pew Research Center says. The share of white Americans with a spouse of a different race or ethnicity has more than doubled, which was 4% in 1980 and is now 11%. The share of black Americans with a spouse of a different race or ethnicity has more than tripled from 5% in 1980 to 18% now. And then interracial marriages among Hispanic Americans has remained pretty steady at 27%. So they're the second most likely group to marry outside their race. And then there was a downtrend in interracial marriages among Asian Americans, who are the number one race or group that will marry outside of their race, at 29%, which is crazy. Just a few other statistics I thought were interesting. I went too far down on my page. I'm also using a computer, which is very different than I usually have, like a pen and paper in front of me. Black American men are twice as likely as black American women to have a spouse of a different race or ethnicity. And then the same statistic exists for Asian American women. Asian American women are more than twice as likely than their male counterparts to marry outside of their race. And then among married white Americans, there's no significant gender gap. So it doesn't really matter, the gender. I'm trying to see if there is any, let's see. So interracial marriage is more common among college-educated Americans than non-college-educated Americans. In metropolitan areas, this is not a surprise, but in metropolitan areas in America, almost 1 in 5 marriages are interracial. And in rural areas in America, only 11% of marriages are interracial. So it really drops when you go down to rural areas. So I thought those were all super interesting, just to kind of understand, like, that the percentages of interracial marriages in America are very small. And that was marriage statistics. So we know that there are a lot of couples out there who may not be married for whatever reason. Maybe they're not allowed to be married, or maybe they just don't want to get married for whatever reason. And we respect that. So we know that there are probably higher statistics of individuals who are actually in interracial relationships. All I could find was marriage data, though, because that's so easy to record. So then I'm going to talk a little bit about, and Daryl's just like sitting through this because the research portion is not, he doesn't like the research as much.
If y'all could see my face right now, she like looked at me and I'm trying to like smile and be encouraging and supportive right now, but I'm just like
this is so boring.
Are you for real? But no, this is good stuff. And it just has me thinking. So I'm also thinking throughout this that she's reading those stats And I'm also looking at the years and the time frame. And if you're, you know, you're listening in, I mean, think about it, 1967.
Yeah.
If you're close to my age or April's age, like, when were your parents born?
Mm.
You know, to put it in perspective. So I'm just kind of going through those dates and thinking about it. Also, when you're talking about, you know, race and ethnicity, I'm thinking about some other things that, you know, impacted or have affected, like, my family and my life as an African-American. And some of those different movements and things as well. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about. Yes. But I'm taking all of this in just like you all are as listeners. So carry on.
Good. Well, and I love that because you'll get a chance to share some of your story and some of that story as we move into some of these other couple stories as well. Daryl and I will kind of intertwine our own stories too, because we want you to understand our experience, but we really want you to understand the experience from a full perspective. And I'm really happy that I was able to get a pretty, what I feel like is a pretty full perspective. Not only is it worldwide views, we got people from Canada, we got people from Europe, from Africa that actually, and the US, of course, actually came back and replied to me, but we had 30 different couples answer these questions. And when you talk, and this is again probably the boring research statistics, but when you talk about return rate and you talk about actually getting qualitative data back, that is amazing. So we have 30 different couples that we get to tell stories for today, and I love that. I love it.
And they're still coming in.
Yeah, we're actually, people are still telling their stories, and that's why, even though this particular topic is probably going to be a 2-3 series podcast, we will do more because we know that there are more stories, and we think that we are being called to kind of talk about this.
Right.
We don't know that there are a lot of other people that are talking about this. So my questions, when I reached out to all these couples that we wanted to find out what was their story, I asked them basically three different questions. I asked first, what was or is a challenge for you in your relationship? Second, what was a learning curve at first for you with your significant other, your partner, or, you know, whoever that is to you in that relationship? And then third, if you have or plan to have children, how will you raise them to respect both of your cultures and backgrounds? And so today only, we're going to talk about the first one, was what was or is a challenge for you in your relationship? And I do want to preface this by saying that we know that there are so many good things that occur in relationships. And I didn't ask for that because when you enter into a relationship, there's kind of this assumption that a majority of the time it should be prefaced with good things.
Right.
And so that wasn't the focus. We wanted to focus on, we know that there are challenges being in interracial relationships just from our experiences. And we really wanted to take the time to focus on that specifically. So as I do in research, what I did was I took all those 30 couples' responses, and again, we are going to share their actual stories, which are super powerful, but what I did was I took the data and their stories that they told me, and I actually quantified it, so I created numbers out of it, and I created percentages.
She quantified it.
I quantified the qualitative. Oh, I know. I'm sorry. This is so like data heavy and research.
This, this is your strength. This is what you're good at.
This is what I do. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm here. I'm with you.
So
rock on, sister.
So when I asked what was or is a challenge for you in your relationship, 43% of the couples that came back and answered told me that it was different upbringings, which is not a that makes complete sense. We all have different upbringings, whether you're in an interracial relationship or not. Like, that's always going to be a hurdle that you have to jump over when you're in a relationship. The second highest was disapproval of the relationship by my family or my partner's family, and 33% of our couples indicated that. 17% of our couples indicated that a challenge for them was living in a place where there is little to no diversity in population. 17% also indicated that a challenge for them was enduring disrespectful comments, stares, or questions about our relationship. 10% indicated a challenge was feeling nervous about what family members or other outsiders might say to us or about us. And then 10% also indicated a challenge being high racial tensions in the United States. And I also said United Kingdom because I got a couple answers back from that, from that country. And that was also one of theirs. And then 7% of our respondents said a challenge was their families not getting along,
right,
which I feel like is pretty low percentage.
Right, that is.
Yeah. So I really appreciate and love the people that took the time to actually answer the questions for us. And so what we're going to do is we're really going to focus a lot on the stories that they're telling, because I want to tell a multi-perspective story about interracial relationships. And again, this is kind of a worldwide viewpoint, but a lot of it really relates to each other, no matter where they're located. And so what we're going to do, we don't say names on this podcast unless they're right. super famous and everybody knows them. Or they gave us permission to, which I did not get permission to. So what I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to tell you what their background is, what their race is or ethnicity, because I did ask for that information. And
right.
I feel like we can share
and
that.
And we can share that. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the first story that I want to tell, and I don't know if it's a story per se, but this was when I asked one person what was a challenge for them in their relationship. For this person, the wife is of Puerto Rican descent and the husband is a white American. And they said that, or she said, I'm sorry, she said to me that people just assume that my husband's wife is Caucasian and they make inappropriate gestures or comments when he tells them that I'm his wife. And I'm Puerto Rican. And so that spurred in me. So I have a story for that for us.
Go ahead. I don't know what this story is.
I know.
She has not checked in with me on this story.
I know. I'm sorry.
I do not know where we're going right now.
No, but you can probably actually tell the story better than I can.
I'll let you tell it.
I'll prep it. Yeah.
And then I'll jump in if need be.
So Daryl and I were in Costco, as we always are. So he probably still has no idea where I'm going with this story.
Nope.
But we were in Costco and I had taken, it was before our son was here, and I had taken Anna with me to go get a hot dog because that's like her favorite thing is to go to Costco and get a hot dog. And it's like super cheap. It's like $1.25 for a hot dog and a drink, which
right.
is amazing.
Right.
So he was in the checkout line getting our groceries, checking out our groceries, and items. And I was in the other line with our daughter. And I remember that the cashier indicated to you, like, she kept referencing you, and the woman who was standing behind you was like husband and wife.
Oh, yeah.
Because the woman behind you was a Black American.
Yep.
And Daryl's like, I don't know what, like, I can't remember exactly how the conversation went, but he was really confused because he's like, I don't know what she's talking about. And she kept referencing, like, your wife. And he's like, but my wife is standing over there, like, in the hot dog line. And he couldn't figure it out. And he finally figured out that she was talking about the woman behind him.
Yeah, she was talking about the lady behind me.
Yeah. And I don't know if you have more to add to that story, but I
no.
just remember that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Standing in line and the lady behind me was standing there. And the cashier was like ringing up everything. And then she was like, oh, so do you all want to separate this? And I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean? Do we all? I'm like, oh, no, mine stopped right here. And she was like, oh, OK. And she just kept making comments about, you know, us too. And I was just like, what in the world is this lady talking about? And I looked back and I was like, oh, I was like, I don't even know this lady behind me. I didn't say it to her. You know, I didn't want to be disrespectful. But yeah, she thought that I was with the lady behind me until I said, oh, no, I'm just paying for me. She's by herself. I don't know her. And then it was kind of like one of those like check moments.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, OK, no, I just thought you two were together. I mm-hmm. just didn't know. And I was like, nope, not today.
Well, and this is not the only time that this has happened to us.
Yeah.
And it's happened when we've been standing right next to each other.
Yeah.
I think one time happened at the bank.
Yep.
And then there was one time maybe in like a Dollar Tree or something. I don't know. Somewhere ridiculous that we went to pick up something just random.
Yeah.
And so it's happened a couple times. And it's kind of a... I don't know if you want to get into how it makes you feel, but
right.
for me, it just kind of makes me feel like, oh, people still don't think that we should be together and they wouldn't put us together. And they just make these assumptions that why would we be together because of the way that we look and because our skin color is different.
Yeah. I remember in the bank, you was in front of me and you walked up and I walked up with you and they told me, oh no, sir, you have to stand back there and wait behind you have to stand back there and wait behind the little partition. And I was like, oh no, I'm with her. And they were like, and they looked at you for confirmation.
That's right. I remember that.
I was like, no, I'm actually with her. And, you know, they gave you that look and you was like, oh yeah, no, we're together. And then I walked up there. No, that's what I definitely remember that in the bank. They tried to send me back.
That's right. They tried to send me back in the line. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
But, no, how it makes me feel, having been discriminated a lot in my life, you kind of, I wouldn't say become immune because you're never immune to it, but, you kind of become a little bit stronger and it doesn't impact or affect you as much because it still affects me. Yeah. And sometimes depending on my state and my mood, I may get frustrated and then sometimes I just let it, you know, slide right off my back and keep rolling down. Mm-hmm. But like I said, haven't been discriminated against, and have experienced prejudice a lot of my life. I've kind of built a tough, you know, skin, built tough skin about it. And it doesn't bother me as much. But then again, if I'm in one of those moods and you come at me like that, you might get checked in a respectful way. Sometimes. With all due respect, ma'am, you don't know me like that.
Sometimes. Daryl will get in the car and be like, look, I'm just feeling a certain type of way and like we don't need to go back in here right now or like we need to just leave right now. Yeah. And I respect that. But it's hard, you know, and I will say it's difficult for me understanding that I am the person in this relationship who is the race of privilege. And there's a lot of reasons that it has been an adjustment for me, mainly because I am the race of privilege. And just knowing that and understanding that, I haven't experienced prejudice. I haven't experienced racism in my life. I haven't even gotten a glimpse or an understanding until Daryl and I got together. Mm-hmm. And when you spend day in and day out with somebody that you love and you start understanding the out and out aggressions and or microaggressions.
Yeah, microaggressions
which
are real.
Just as bad.
They are real.
But they're more disguised. Mm-hmm. You start to understand that person's viewpoint while also still knowing that you still will never fully understand how it makes them feel because your skin color is still the privileged race. And I want to be clear when I say that, that's if you are white, you are of a privileged skin color and race.
Yeah, and when she's by herself, like, well, now I know with the kids, though.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she gets it with the kids now. But if I'm not with her, I'm sure for her it's a little bit better. But anytime that we're together is usually when she can get a glimpse of what that experience has been like with me because it still happens to me when I'm with her. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I'm with her, and if we're in certain places or we're out and about, how I approach her, I'm very aware of that because, you know, I don't want people to think that I'm attacking her. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think that I'm trying to snatch a person and run. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like, when I'm dressing and I'm just chilling and I'm out and I got on some sweatpants and I'll put on a hoodie with my hat on in a heartbeat. And, like, I may walk up to her and put my arm around her waist because I can do that. And I can immediately see people start to get, like, very tense and, like, start to stand up and make moves towards us or whatever. And then I'll look at her and she'll tell you, I'll pull my hat off. I'll take my sunglasses off and I'll kind of, you know, straighten up a little bit and come out of that chilling mode just to make my presence a little bit more comfortable.
And I have to understand the role I play in that. Yeah. Then I'm responding to him like, oh, you know, not just a, hey, let me focus on the kids while he does this. But I, you know, make the effort to turn around and respond to him and like, I'm your wife.
Like, it's okay.
It's okay.
And it happens more often than you would believe.
Often, yes. Okay, so I'm going to move on to the next story, which I'm not sure. This is just an interesting example, although I'm not sure that either of us have a corresponding story for this. But when I asked about a challenge, the wife got back to me, and this is mostly, I'll say, mostly women who got back to me because they're more willing to just, you know,
we
share.
Did have a couple of guys,
we
though.
Did have a couple of guys.
And actually, it's so funny, before you go to that, the guys actually reached back out to me.
That's true. They did.
I know. And I was like,
you're like, I didn't even ask you.
I was like,
questions.
I didn't ask you anything. I don't know you.
I didn't know these.
And it's funny how they know that we do this together, and they know the questions came from her.
Yeah.
And the guys would reach back out to me either with more questions or just clarification, or they would want to give their input. But they don't want to give it to her. They want to give it to me.
Yeah, that was funny.
And I was like, wait a minute. What is going on here? I'm not analyzing this.
Daryl's like, I don't want data.
I don't want this data. No, you keep it.
So this challenge, the wife is Japanese American and her husband is white American. And I want to preface it by saying she's actually a first generation. Yes, that's right. First generation Japanese American, meaning she was born in America, but her parents were not. And so she said their biggest challenge is different language and culture. She knows that her parents wished that her husband spoke Japanese and could share all the nuances at the dinner table because Japanese culture is very different than American culture, especially in dining. Mm-hmm. And so that for her is a challenge for them.
Right. We have a similar challenge, though, like when me and my cousins and stuff get together and how we talk to each other and some of the terminologies and slang that
and
we
I'm
use
like,
together.
What?
She's like, what did he mean by that? And I'm like, oh, I'll tell you about it later. Don't ask me that right now.
Yeah, that's true.
It almost is like a different language. Because when I get around my cousins or my family, I mean, I talk very differently than you probably hear me talking on the podcast.
Yeah.
And we understand each other. And sometimes we don't even use complete sentences or words.
Yeah.
And we can understand and pick up exactly what we're saying, what we're trying to say. And she'll look at me and be like, what did he say? What did he actually mean by that? And some of the words or the paraphrases that we use, it could be perceived or taken, wrongly, depending on who heard it, if you don't understand the context of it or understand how we share information that way. So
I want to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. And because this upsets me tremendously.
I don't know what this question is.
I know.
Is.
It's not anywhere. In my, like, he's looking at my computer like, what is it? It's
I'm
not
like, where
it's
is
in
this
my
question
head.
At? Oh, my goodness.
So this upsets me a lot when I hear this. And I haven't heard anybody say it to you, although I'm sure they probably have in your life. But if I hear somebody say, you're very well spoken.
Mm.
And to me, like, I've never one time had anybody ever say that to me, and I consider myself pretty well spoken, but nobody has ever said that to me. Mm-hmm. So has anybody ever said that to you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes. And what's so funny is that, and you know this, and some people that know me really, really, really well and that are very close to me, I can turn it on and off as needed. And how I was just saying, when I get with my cousins and my family and the setting and the place that I'm in and I feel comfortable enough and I know the people, like, I can turn it off and I can get pretty gritty and use some slang. And when I do, our engagements and things like that.
Right.
Most of the time, it's not those people, though, because they have an expectation when they bring me in to speak that I'm going to be able to communicate effectively. And when I'm doing, some of our projects and presentations and things like that,
right. The
expectation is there that the content will be presented in a way that it will be understood.
Right.
So it usually happens like in general public or with groups of people that are not familiar with me. And they're just like, oh, wow. Or they have different expectations. Or when I'm dressed a certain way. Because, I don't always wear the suit, the tie, the button-ups.
Right.
And if I have on a pair of sweats and I'm just kind of hanging out or I'm chilling, as I like to say, and I automatically start to speak as if I'm, trying to relay a message that I want someone to understand, or I'm trying to have a business or a casual conversation, and that's when it'll come, oh, wow. And it usually comes back as like, oh, so... Where did you go to college? Or, it comes in that microaggressive way as, oh, wow, you said that very well. I completely understand and relate with you on that. And
I just want to drive this point home is that people are saying this to you because their expectation
right.
is that if you are black
yep.
and you dress a certain way.
Correct.
Depending on how you dress, you may or may not be well-spoken.
Yes, and location matters as
location
well.
Location matters.
Definitely matters as well. But usually if I have on my, you know, my button up or my slacks or I'm dressed a certain way, it's an expectation. Or if I'm in a certain setting or if I'm giving a keynote.
Right.
Those are the expectations. But most of the time it's when I'm like just kind of down and I actually just cross paths with someone randomly and we engage in a conversation. Or if I even engage with them in a conversation and know how to facilitate that and carry that out, they're just like, oh my gosh, like,
you can communicate.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know.
And for me, that's also a privilege check, because to me, it doesn't matter where I'm at. It doesn't matter what I'm wearing. I could be in sweats. I could be in a 3-piece suit. And it doesn't matter. People are never going to stop and say, you're so well spoken.
Yeah.
Ever. It won't even cross their minds. Why would it? But the expectation for you can be there. Okay. That's interesting. Let's go on to the next one. This one was interesting for me to get back. So this person is actually a good friend of mine. We used to work together at a previous institution. He works in Western Georgia, which is considered Deep South.
Right.
He's a gay man, and him and his partner, he is white American, and his partner is Black American. And so he said that I would say the biggest challenge we have faced at this point would be living in the South and being interracial. Being a gay couple in Western Georgia is surprisingly less dramatic than you would think, but we do get some disapproving looks from time to time, more often from other gay couples, ironically. I thought that was interesting.
That is.
I thought that was really interesting. And I think to me that really speaks to geography.
Right.
And the role that it plays. And my story I could have a lot of stories about this. I will preface this with the background of I grew up in a pretty, there was maybe a little diversity, but it was really not a diverse town. Small town in Colorado. I love the town, but it was just a very... there was not really diversity there. And so when I moved to the South was my first taste of any racism, experiencing any racism at all. And I don't want to say that our teachers led us astray or tried to lead us to believe that racism didn't exist, but it was not anything that we really spent a lot of time on or talked about. And so when I got to, I truly had the belief that racism was not eradicated, but that it was not nearly as bad as it had been in the past until I got to the South.
Wow.
Yeah, that is just that's a white privilege check right there. And it was a shock for me. I had culture shock for multiple reasons. I mean, there are multiple reasons to get culture shock when you move from one part of the country to another, but that was a huge culture shock for me.
Right. And you know what? It's the same for me. Being born in a city where there was a lot of diversity and then moving a couple of times and then finally moving to a town and a city where there was some diversity, but it was a definite divide. It's like over here you have one race and over here you have the other race, and to live in between, but to come from somewhere where diversity was everywhere was also a culture shock for me. So when you talk about that, not even traveling across the world, just from state to state, depending on which state, it can also be a shock as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we were house hunting, and this was the kind of the final time, because in reality, we could say like we had been house hunting for years, and if you guys listened to episode 5, then you know our experience with the house hunting. But before we had even found our house, when we first sat down with our realtor and we talked about, for our price point, what can we get in certain areas of town where we live, and I remember she had mentioned an area of town, and this made me, oh my gosh, I still remember, like, I kind of feel like I want to tear up right now because I had to check my privilege. But basically she had said, well, what about this area of town? You can get a lot more house for your money and it's going to be nice. And I was like, sure, I'm open to it. And Daryl sat back and said, no. And I was like, no, what do you mean? Like, I would love to get more house for our money. What do you mean, no? And he said, April, you would be fine living there. your daughter and I would not be okay living there. And when he put that in perspective like that, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's right, because there is very little diversity on that side of town. And not only that, it was the makeup and some of the incidents that we knew had happened in that side of town. And so I took a step back, like the fact that because of my skin color, I didn't even have to think that way at all, was just a shock. It was just a, because I'm white, I don't have to think about things like that.
Right, absolutely. I remember that. And I remember saying that, and I was dead serious, and that option was completely off the table.
Yep. So I'm going to share the next challenge from somebody's story. So again, it was the wife who got back to me. And the wife is white American, and her husband is Pakistani. She said, one thing that stands out to me the most was the timeline of our relationship. We got married very quickly for American standards. This affected my family much more than I was ready for. We knew each other only 4.5 months before we said I do. We have been married 7 months now, and there is still tension between members of my family. In turn, in my husband's culture, we should not have been together as long as we were without being married.
Wow.
That is a very different culture.
Very different.
Yes. We don't really have a story that correlates to that, I don't think.
I do not have a story.
But I thought that was a really interesting challenge, because you were taking two very, very different cultures.
Yeah. So I was trying to think. I was like, do we have anything that can relate to that? And I came up with absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to really share that challenge because I thought it was super interesting, and especially the fact that they knew each other for, in our standard in America, like for you and me, we wouldn't have gotten married after just a few months of knowing each other. But I know that it's just very different.
Some people do it though, because I have a really good friend who got married after a couple of months, but he said he knew, and he knew what he knew.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So good for you guys, and we
she said it like well. That. Well, good for you guys.
Yeah. No, we wish you very well with your marriage. I think that's amazing. So we're going to come back next week. Talk more in part two of this series on interracial relationships about the various challenges that people have experienced just being in an interracial relationship.
Right. So we'll come back next time and pick it up where we left off.
Yeah.
All right.
Until then.
All right.
Hey, everybody. If you like today's episode, please subscribe to the Success in Black and White podcast. You'll get notified every time a new episode is posted, which is every Tuesday.
If you loved this episode, help us spread the love. Rate and leave a review on our iTunes podcast episode. Also, share that you listen on social media and tag us on your posts. My social media handle is @IAmDarylLovett on all social media platforms.
And mine is April Dawn Lovett on all social media platforms as well. Thanks for listening. Oh my gosh, you sound like Keith Sweat.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, did it record?
Yeah.